Hello, friends. This is Andy Atwell welcoming you to Come, Let Us Reason Together. This next half hour will be dedicated to putting the Bible back into its number one place in the hearts and minds of mankind. Throughout the centuries, the Bible remained the number one book sold. Only today has it taken a back shelf position in men's lives and minds. Even Christian bookstores have more books about the Bible than the Bible itself. The Bible is the only book written by God, and in it alone is found the pathway to life. Come now, let us reason together with Gilbert Larson and his friends.
Hello, everybody. This is Gilbert from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
This is Andy from Vancouver, Washington.
And this is Steve from Gilbert, Arizona.
We'd like to ask you to come and join us, come and reason together through the Bible. We're going through the book of Matthew, and we're looking at the book of Matthew as the first step. It's like the instance where Jacob or Israel had a moment where he had a vision of God and he was lying. He put a stone under his head and he looked up to heaven and he could see this ladder. And on top of the ladder was Yahweh, the Lord. And it was a stairway that went to heaven and angels were ascending and descending on it. And we also were finding out that Ivan Panin, who analyzed the Bible mathematics, he also discovered that Matthew had a theme to it, like the first step in the ladder, and it went on to Mark that had another theme, and Luke and John, and they were like going to the first grade, how you learn certain things that help you. It lays out a pattern of what you're going to learn the rest of your life. It lays out this foundation or footprint. And then you go to the next step. When you complete the first step, you go to the next step. And the book of Matthew, he felt like we had to understand that before we went on to understand Mark. And then Luke, it's just found in the four Gospels. This particular pattern is found in the Good News. And in Matthew, what was the main feature of that was talking about the kingdom of the heavens. That was the only of the Gospels that talked about the kingdom of the heavens. It was the only gospel. The others talked about the kingdom of God, and it proclaimed in this first step proclaimed that Jesus was the king. You know, you have a kingdom, well, you have to have a king. And then, but this king is different than any other king ever. Because this king, and we notice with Queen Elizabeth that more than other kings before her, she was a servant of the people. Sure, she lived luxuriously and so on, but she seemed to have this attitude of having care for the people. The only czar in Russia, the only one that ever really cared for the people was not Russian. By chance, and it wasn't a man. It was Catherine the Great, and she seemed to have this great care for the people, the only czar. But Jesus, of course, is paramount. He sets the way. Somebody might have read their Bible. I wonder, both of Queen Elizabeth, and they happen to be moms, Catherine the Great also. I wonder if they didn't understand the Bible to some degree. Well, that's bringing us to the book of Mark, the book of service. Jesus came. He didn't come as a king, even though he is king, but it's hidden. He came as a servant to service. He went through everything that we went through, and he died for us. He served us even to the point of giving up his life. And then the next book, the book of Luke, it proclaims the Son of Man. He took on the form of a man. Now, you can't judge or understand a person unless you've walked in their skin, walked in their footsteps. And Jesus came in our skin. He came dressed in the suit of a fallen man. His lineage goes back to the fallen Adam, who had a son after he fell, whose name is Seth, and his lineage starts there. And then on to John, it proclaims Jesus as the Son of God. And it goes, Matthew starts at about the year 2000 before Christ, and but Luke goes way back to Adam. He goes all the way back in the lineage to Adam, and then John even goes further back to in the beginning. So there's some different features in these. You know, when you're younger, you don't see as big of a picture, but as you grow, you see a little wider picture. You start with only 2,000 years. Well, we start with a focus when you're a little kid or a baby. You start with what's going on in the house, and then maybe the yard, and then maybe the neighborhood, and then someday you grow up and you fly around the world. And isn't that interesting how the scope of the time expands with these four steps? And John goes on to in the beginning. Well, we are still in Matthew. We're in chapter 12. And we're in verses 1, the first context, 1 through 8. Isn't that interesting? That's Jesus' number. And it's going to talk about the Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath.
At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath, and his disciples became hungry and began to pick the heads of grain and eat. But when the Pharisees saw this, they said to him, "Look, your disciples do what is not lawful to do on a Sabbath." But he said to them, "Have you not read what David did when he became hungry, he and his companions, how that he entered the house of God, and they ate the consecrated bread, which was not lawful for him to eat, nor for those with him, but for the priests alone? Or have you not read in the law that on the Sabbath the priests in the temple break the Sabbath and are innocent? But I say to you that something greater than the temple is here. But if you had known what this means, 'I desire compassion and not a sacrifice,' you would have not condemned the innocent. For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath."
Now, this is an interesting phrase because you don't really see this until the book of Luke, where Jesus is proclaimed as the Son of Man. But he came in our place, and he steps down to this place in this. We're proclaiming him in the book of Matthew as king, but he is showing that we men are even lords. If we're in his will, the Sabbath is not to rule over us. And he sets the standard. And so we don't have to have the regulations in the law. We can have the Sabbath in a new way. And he'll explain that later on. If we come into his family, there is going to be a new Sabbath that's going to set us free from all these physical requirements. It is actually going to be refreshing. It won't be full of laws and restrictions as to how far you can go, you know, what you can do, if you can even cook or can't cook. And he will proclaim that later on. We'll get to that later on. But Jesus is the Lord of the Sabbath. And he's the Son of Man. He's talking to us in the realm of men. He's going to set us free, and he's going to give us another rest that is actually going to give rest to our souls, not just our bodies. He has come to proclaim rest for our souls. And we'll read more later on. What were you guys thinking about that?
Well, he makes this statement. He says, out of nowhere, he says, "I say to you, greater than the temples here." So all of a sudden, they were talking about what you can and can't do on the Sabbath, which was related to the temple and those rules. And he says somebody's greater than the temple that's here. Now, back in Matthew chapter 3, when John the Baptist came, He was John the Baptist's dad. We'll learn about this later, but his father, Zacharias, was a priest, and so John was a priest. But where did John go? John went into the wilderness, which was way away from the what? The temple. So that statement would have already been made by John just by physically going out there. And now we have Jesus just coming up with this statement, something greater than the temple is here. They were talking about the things he was doing, and he just made a giant statement here about the temple, that it's going to change.
And who is greater than the temple?
Jesus is greater than the temple.
The king.
Yes.
Jesus is the king. This is what is being proclaimed in Matthew. Greater than the temple is here. The king is here. Anything else stood out to you in that?
Well, in a simple way to say it, when Jesus says the Son of Man, or Jesus, is Lord of the Sabbath, what he's saying is what he says about the Sabbath goes. And so as we go along, we'll learn more things about what he says about the Sabbath.
And we'll find out what it really is that gives rest to this. The old rules gave rest to the flesh. Now we're working into inside of the man. There is a heart of man at the core, and there's also his soul or his life. And we're going to find out that this rest is going to be now in our soul. He'll give rest to our souls.
And we just read that in Matthew 11, where it says, in the very end of Matthew 11, it says, take my yoke within you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. And just on the heels of him saying that, he says, he's the Lord of the Sabbath.
I'm the king. We're going to see three new laws are going to come into the Bible, and we'll get into those later on, but they were bound in the Old Testament, especially the priests and Levites and so on. They were bound by the Old Testament law, but Jesus is going to, with him are going to come three new laws that are going to be regarding our spirit, our soul, and our body. So we're going to continue. We're just opening your eyes to this.
He just mentions it, and we're talking a little about it.
Yeah, and it's going to set us free from these binding laws that govern our flesh. And of course, over the 2,000 years since Jesus has been gone, the rabbis get together, and now they've got 400 different rules just for washing your hands. And so the Lord, well, they didn't believe those Jews. A Jewish man actually taught us the Bible, and he was set free. He was a lot like the Apostle Paul. And there were other men like him, like Ivan Panin and so on, that have instructed us. But Jesus came to set us free from all of man's encumbrances that entangle us. Okay, Matthew 12, 9 through 14.
I wanted to say one more thing about this. When the Pharisees saw it, they said, your disciples do what is not lawful on the Sabbath. Jesus immediately talks and starts quoting what King David did. They were going, he brought up King David right away and said, King David, when he hungered, they ate with him, and they entered the house of God and ate the show loaves, and was not lawful to eat. So he was telling them a story that they thought they knew, and they didn't even know that that was okay. But he used King David's name right there.
Well, there was going to come a time when God was going to bypass these men who got in the way, who started abusing their office. And we see this a lot today with Christianity. And they're going to be bypassed, and God is going to be available to the average man. And he's not going to be a respecter of person like these Pharisees were. And he's going to open it up to everyone. That is, everyone that serves him. Okay, we're going to read 9 through 14.
And he departed thence and went into their synagogue, and lo, a man having a hand withered. And they ask him, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbaths? That they might accuse him. And he said to them, "What man shall there be of you, and shall have one sheep, and of this fall into a pit on the Sabbath? Will he not lay hold on it and lift it out? How much then is a man more value than a sheep? So that it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath." Then saith the man to the man, "Stretch forth thy hand," and he stretched it forth, and it was restored whole as the other. But the Pharisees went out and took counsel against him, how they might destroy him.
So let's just call the Pharisees what they are, the religious leaders of the day.
They were. That's exactly what they are.
Yeah, whether any, you pick your denomination, and a denomination, it's the religion of today. So any one of them, you will have people that try to set the laws, set the order, and if you don't do what they say, I guess you go home, right? And anyway, this is still happening today, 2,000 years later. They were called scribes and the Pharisees, and today they're ministers, preachers, teachers, and so on. In the scriptural account of how the body of Christ, how Jesus' family is really a closer term for that, there's a picture of it in Mark that we'll get into, so I don't think I'll describe it right now, but it doesn't look at all like any church building today. It's not set up at all like it. It would be more like something that we had about 100 years ago that was experienced in America, maybe 150 years ago, and it was called the Church in the Round. And that's all I'll say right now, but we'll get into details on that when we get to Mark, and especially chapter 3. Verses 15 to 21, "But Jesus, aware of this, withdrew from there. Many followed him, and he healed them." So he withdrew from the places where the religious folks were, and he healed many, and warned them not to tell who he was. This was to fulfill what was spoken of through Isaiah the prophet, "Behold, my servant whom I have chosen, my beloved, in whom my soul is well pleased. I will put my spirit upon him, and he shall proclaim justice to the Gentiles, and he will not quarrel, nor cry out, nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets. A battered reed he will not break, and a smoldering wick he will not put out, until he leads justice to victory, and in his name the Gentiles will hope." It says in the Bible, "Come, let us reason together." It doesn't say to argue. And I went to this one place to see what the old Assembly of God was like, because at one time you would find true believers in the Assembly of God, and then they had some radical preachers on TV that got into trouble and got disgraced, and all of a sudden you see that name gone and a lot of new names coming up that is still the Assembly of God, but they put a different wrapper on it. And that's just one of many churches today. Another one was a Baptist church. It was a huge church in New Mexico, and they took away the name and they put a different wrapper on it, and they called themselves a weed. Well, they called themselves in the farmland or whatever. You get this particular weed that blows around and tumbles around, and so they gave themselves that name, but it's still a weed. And isn't it interesting, they chose a weed. They're telling people that is something that actually the Lord is saying is not good. There was wheat, and then there were tares. But they use another name for it, or if you plant a garden and weeds grow into it, it's quite interesting.
That was not any good. It's never any good in the Bible terminology, weeds.
Yeah, like sagebrush. It's a huge church, and they call themselves, it's a weed. And animals
So that means just to tumble around wherever the wind blows you.
Well, wow. It's quite interesting to me that they don't really consider what they're really saying, because I think they've left the Bible. And, you know, there's wheat and grain and so on, but then there's other things that get in the way of a harvest for, you know, for mankind.
I find it interesting that this picture keeps following Jesus, where it's many followed him and he healed them all. And in this again, in verse 16, he warns them not to tell them who he was. It said that before earlier.
Now, what do you suppose that is?
Well, the one before, we talked about it, so he wasn't looking for all of this credit. He was just there to heal people.
Or maybe he hasn't revealed himself because he's not revealed until...
Yeah. If he doesn't want to get revealed before the proper timing to when he's going to die.
The book of John. Mm. Isn't it interesting? It says here, when we get to John, let's find out. We're testing Ivan Panin's. We're all learning. So.
And it's revealed in what is being said.
Yeah, it's not yet to be revealed. That's like step four. He's not yet the Son of God to us yet. And he's holding people back. And I believe people are seeing it. But he's telling them to hold it down. This is going to be step four. Right now we're in first grade. But notice how, I don't know if you've been around this one church I started talking about. I went, and they're all in the same denomination, and I wanted to see what they believed on a particular subject. So I went there, and I was looking for information on it to see if they still believed a certain way that was actually correct. They used to about in the 1900s, 1920s. I met a lot of people that went to that church at that time, and they were teaching the truth. And then they started deviating when these really glorious TV preachers came up, and they started doing really oddball things in front of people. It was actually embarrassing to watch them. But I was just curious to see what they believed, and I got there, and nobody paid attention to me like I could have been a new convert. But they were so busy, they were actually arguing and raising their voice. And look at what it says here about Jesus. That a battered reed he will not break, and a smoldering wick he will not put out. He came for the lowly, the meek and the lowly, the people that have been trodden on in this life.
Frail.
In 19, it says, he will not quarrel nor cry out, nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets.
Yeah. How about these street preachers?
Yelling at you?
Yeah. It's embarrassing. I'd be embarrassed to do that. Verses 22 through 32 in Matthew chapter 12.
Then a demon-possessed man who was blind and mute was brought to Jesus, and he healed him, so that the mute man spoke and saw. All the crowds were amazed and were saying, "This man cannot be the son of David, can he?" But when the Pharisees heard this, they said, "This man casts out demons only by Beelzebul, the ruler of the demons." And knowing their thoughts, Jesus said to them, "Any kingdom divided against itself is laid waste, and any city or house divided against itself will not stand. If Satan casts out Satan, he is divided against himself. How then will his kingdom stand? If I by Beelzebul cast out demons, by whom do your sons cast them out? For this reason, they will be your judges. But if I cast out demons by the Spirit of God, then the kingdom of God has come upon you. Or how can anyone enter the strong man's house and carry off his property unless he first binds the strong man, and then he will plunder his house? He who is not with me is against me, and he who does not gather with me scatters. Therefore, I say to you, any sin and blasphemy shall be forgiven people, but blasphemy against the Spirit shall not be forgiven. Whoever speaks a word against the Son of Man, it shall be forgiven him. But whoever speaks against the Holy Spirit, it shall not be forgiven him, either in this age or in the age to come.
There's some pretty strong subjects for base number one, aren't they, or step number one? Would that have been your choice to think to say this to a person that's brand new? That's
Hi, we want to talk to you about the Bible and say the word demons and the devil and Satan. That is knowing about how everything really is. He's not withholding a piece of the whole picture.
You know, in some cultures and countries like the Middle East and Asia and so on, they talk about the presence of demons with more comfort than in America. I think because of horror movies and all these other things, they glorify them, they exaggerate them, and they don't tell the truth about them. They make it something to be extremely afraid of. And in maybe like in Indonesia, they know about them. It's not an unusual thing. And they're in every country, they're in every city, they're everywhere.
Remember the man in Albuquerque, we went into his house just one time and talked to him, and he told us it was in the South Pacific where he was. And he was telling stories about this, like we wouldn't believe him or something. We're just going, and he talked to us like an hour about it, how these spirits did things, and it was very well known in their culture.
Yeah, but
they're raised from a child knowing about these things.
Well, we grew up with Hollywood, and they exaggerated, dramatized all these things. We've seen demons come out of people crying in a loud voice, exactly like it says in here. But you don't want to embarrass a person when they come out of a person. Some people can become demon possessed if they get hit in the head and let's say they're in a very weakened state and their resistance is down, that can easily happen to somebody. And or if they're sick, or if they're raised in a house where there's molestations or different things going on, and it's nothing to do with a fault of theirs, and that can happen to a person. So to humiliate them and blame them, there were a lot of things Jesus took a person apart and went and healed them. And that is talked about freely here, but also it says to watch what you say. Hey kid, no cuss words here. Or watch what you say about the Lord. Watch your language. I get out of this too, don't you? Watch the way you talk. Watch the words that come out of your mouth. In this house, we're not going to tolerate that kind of language. And God likes positive. He doesn't like the negative talk. Well, we'll have to continue on tomorrow in Matthew chapter 12. And until we meet again, may God lead you into all truth.
You can contact Gilbert and his friends at www.gilbertandfriends.com. That's www.gilbertandfriends.com. Or write to him, Gilbert and Friends, P.O. Box 820347, Vancouver, Washington 98682. That's P.O. Box 820347, Vancouver, Washington 98682. Or call us at 360-600-6726. That's 360-600-6726. We invite your comments as we reason together through the Bible. Thank you for joining us on Come Let Us Reason Together and reminding you all to eat a healthy breakfast every morning. Our favorite breakfast is the Bible because it is written, "Man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God."